the future. There are no people. There are no people in the future.
No people at all.
There are no people in the future.
Where did all my people go?
There are no people in the future.
Let me try my people call.
Everybody, welcome to Raging Chickens Out to Coop Live. It's our, normally this is our Monday show, but we've got a special carve out of the week for you, and hope we're going to be doing a lot more of these too in the days to come. Going right to our YouTube channel, we're doing live. This is Wednesday, February 24, 2021. Now, Out to Coop Live here, we talk to progressives, activists, and troublemakers of all sorts from our own backyards, from around the country. We on Fridays, you might be tuning into our regular podcast. We've been told to say our flagship podcast. That's on Fridays when I talk to Sean Kitchen, where we break down the good, the bad, and the ugly in state and national politics. But you can get both of these, Out to Coop Live and our flagship podcast, by subscribing to our podcast on Podbean, iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast. And I'll tell you right now, for those folks who are tuning in on our YouTube Live for today, make sure you hit that subscribe button. Make sure you hit that bell so you know every time that we go live, so you don't miss anything out of content what's happened right here on Raging Chicken. And you can help support this show by becoming a patron by as little as $5 a month by going to patreon.com/rcpress. And if you're listening to this show right now on YouTube, feel free to kind of jump into our comment section. We'd love to take your questions and comments a little bit later on in the show. It'd be absolutely fantastic. And if you're looking for more PA progressive talk, you can always tune into the Rick Smith Show. Rick Smith Show live stream at 9 p.m. Eastern on YouTube channel, on Twitter and Facebook, you know, wherever you stream anything live, that's where Rick is. You can also tune into his daily podcast wherever you get your podcast. That's the Rick Smith Show. Great labor-oriented show. You know, what I've said to everybody is, like, you know, when I first moved to Pennsylvania, everything I learned about PA politics, I learned from Rick Smith. So, that's fantastic. You know, Rick's show is a national show. He's on Free Speech TV and all that stuff. But he's a fantastic guy. I also want to give a shout out for all the gamers out there to check out the Game Inn, right? That's Game Inn with two N's, right? That's located right on 309 in Quakertown. The Game Inn is a Quakertown-based, black family-owned gaming store. They're friends of the show and awesome folks all around, right? The family of, like, one of my son's best friends. They're freaking awesome people. The Game Inn has almost every gaming product you can imagine, retro N64s to Nintendo DSs, PS4s to the Switch. You got video games for all platforms, new and used, large collection of collectibles, action figures, Funko Pops. Like, literally, you walk into the store and there's, like, a wall of Funko Pops that, like, you swear is going to collapse upon you, right? Which is phenomenal. So do check them out. And if, you know, you got kids, the kids get a discount for every A on their report card. Check them out on their Facebook page. You'll get this in the show notes. Follow them on Twitter at The Game Inn. That's The Game Inn with two N's. Got a question about a game, looking for something hard to get, message them on Facebook. Drop them an email at thegameinpa@gmail.com or give them a call at 267-424-2535. And you check them out online at thegameinn.com. Special shout out to Jonathan Mann, who wrote our intro song, There Are No People in the Future. Check out all his great stuff on his YouTube page and follow him on Twitter at songadayman, again, with two N's. It's kind of a little theme we got going here today. At songadayman on Twitter. Fantastic. Well, I'll tell you, I'm totally psyched about today. On Out to Coop Live today, we are welcoming Jordan Hopkins to the show. Hopkins is a 23-year-old writer, editor, and independent journalist located in Philadelphia. He's been covering PA's right-wing extremists and the grift at the core of the emerging Patriot Party. Like, literally, it's like if you could set up something that is about just kind of like watching people steal money from other people, it's like, here you go. This is exactly what it is. And we'll be digging into his latest article called The Party of Grifters and the Rise of Extremism in the PA More Broadly. You can check out all his great reporting at www.itsalienmuse.com. That's itsalienmuse.com. You'll see it in the show notes today. You can also follow him on Twitter at @jhop_phl. That's at @jhop_phl. Then it's J, the letter J, HOP_PHL. Welcome to the show, Jordan.
Hey, Kevin, thank you so much for having me. I'm psyched to be here as well.
And I'm like, well, like I said to you before we hopped on today, it's like, you know, I've been seeing your stuff starting to pop up in my feeds, you know, I know for a little while now. And, you know, when I saw your piece come out, like at the Party of Grifters, you know, I'm just like, man, I just got to see if I get this guy on the show because, you know, as you may know, this listeners of the show certainly know that, you know, we've been at Raging Chicken. We've been covering white supremacists and the rise of a right wing extremism, you know, going back to 2016 and before then, and kind of shouting on the rooftops, basically like these folks are not going away. Right. The whole idea, like ignore them, they're going to go away, is not going to happen. So.
Yeah, I don't know. Absolutely. And I think that, you know, I've been covering the far right in Philadelphia and in Pennsylvania for about 6 months now. I started, you know, right in the middle of the BLM protests. Last summer was when I really started to get involved. And it really does start to feel a little while like you're the only one like wearing a tinfoil hat, where like you're trying so hard to like tell people that this is the problem. And then the things happen that you said were probably going to happen. And you can only just be like, we've been, you know, talking about it for a significant period of time now.
Well, and it's the worst kind of "I told you so," right? Because you're like,
I didn't want to be right. No.
I didn't want people to have to get beaten in the streets and to say like, "I told you so." I mean, that's a feeling, completely unsatisfying feeling, right?
Yeah, exactly. But you know, I just, as like a little bit of background, I started covering Philadelphia in general as it started during the BLM protests. I moved here about a year and a half ago, and I love the city, and to see, you know, I guess the event that really like brought it into focus for me was me and a couple of my friends and my housemates were at the Marconi Plaza protests right in the middle of that. I think that was like the beginning of June. And watching, you know, we had heard reports that the Proud Boys were going to be there. And I didn't really know anything about the Proud Boys at that point, you know, just from what I'd been following in Portland. But they weren't, you know, nearly like the kind of national story that they are today.
Right.
And so, you know, we heard that they were going to be there. It's like, oh, Proud Boys are coming, you know. But actually, like, having gone there and seeing it started with a live stream video that I think a lot of people have seen of the Unicorn Riot reporters who were there, who had their tires slashed by, had their bike tires slashed by Proud Boys there. And then the next day, we were there because of what had happened to Unicorn Riot. We wanted to be there to support journalists who are, you know, covering this stuff. And we watched, you know, 50 or so Proud Boys just turn that protest into a riot. And it was then that I was very convinced that, you know, this is something that needs to be covered. And as we got more into it, you know, I recognized that it was a pattern that was developing all across Pennsylvania, you know, over the last, like, mostly since the Trump election, but digging way back before then. And you know, seeing it culminate in the January 6th riots where, you know, Pennsylvania has the second most amount of participants arrested from that event, you know,
right.
It is very, very common for people from Pennsylvania to be involved in these things and to have been radicalized, you know, at Harrisburg protests or at GOP events in the Philadelphia area. And that is definitely something that needs to be focused on. So, you know, we just kind of want to like create like a network of community journalism that is covering these people who are dangerous, you know?
Well, let me ask you this. I mean, we didn't really talk about this like before the show here, but I mean, you just made me think of this. That whole idea that, you know, you're noticing these, what's going on right around you, right? You're noticing that there's these groups that are kind of emerging, and then you've got other folks who are just, you know, you described it as like wearing the tinfoil hat. I mean, how did people respond to you when you first started kind of ringing the bell and kind of shining a light on this stuff and say, hey, we need to be paying attention to this stuff?
You know, and I continue to cover it because it's something that people really want, you know, in their coverage, especially in Philadelphia, in West Philly and in South Philly. I've had people follow me and be like, you know, hey, we've been following this stuff for a long time. It's not just the Proud Boys. There are reactionary groups and people, you know, all across those areas who, you know, the community has been very concerned about for a long period of time. And, you know, going back to what before that I was covering, you know, in 2018, there were the We the People rallies that had, like, you know, people like Ethan Nordine was here,
exactly.
Alan Swinney, you know, a world, like, you know, nationally known Proud Boys now. But, you know, in the past, and we spoke about this a little bit off camera, but there, you know, the input that we kind of got was, you know, just ignore them. Don't give them any airtime.
Right.
You know, they all they want is attention. And while I think that's true, I think that not giving them attention allows them to continue to develop into like the violence that we saw explode, you know, during the BLM protests and on J6, you know, all those things are connected by them being allowed to foster from not getting the coverage that, that they probably deserve.
Yeah, I remember when we had when we were pointing out this stuff again back in 2016, 2015, 2014, starting to notice this stuff. Sean Kitchen in particular did a whole bunch of reporting, about what was actually going on. We had, you know, I teach at Kutztown University too as well, and we were one of the universities that was targeted by, you know, that white supremacist group called Identity Europa, right? And like again, you start showing people this Identity Europa stuff with this all this kind of, you know, they use all this Greek imagery and stuff, and you try to tell people that this is a real thing, and they're kind of like, it's just a couple of jokers online, right? And you're like, no, these people are very serious about, you know, building out an infrastructure. And again, not to say that they're all 100% exactly the same. I mean, there's these weird divisions on the kind of the far right too as well when it comes to, you know, how far down the QAnon path are you and how far down are you on the white nationalist path? I mean, it's kind of like, you know, pick your brand of extreme republicanism in the country right now. But yeah, I agree. I mean, I'm so glad, this is one of the reasons I'm so glad that you're covering this stuff, because it feels like it's moving extraordinarily fast, right? I think, you know, what we've seen under the kind of the Trump administration, in particular in the lead up of the election, is that these groups seem to be, say, jockeying for a position within the cultural mainstream, even if not all of them can get in the political mainstream. And I'm just thinking about, you know, the last week, you got all these kind of, you know, these right wing folks in Congress at the national level, you know, entering all their Zoom calls with, like, you know, fully automatic weapons behind them. Is kind of like, hey, welcome to democracy, you know, or else, it seems.
Enjoy the guns.
Enjoy the guns.
And I think that if there's something that I've learned covering this, you know, it's that the internet, you know, people can say, oh, you know, it's silly, they're cosplayers, they're LARPers, you know, they're just dudes online who are, you know, posting like Identity Europa stuff, like you said, exactly, like things that might seem silly. But like, there's one thing that I've learned is that nothing is, you know, everything that's on the internet is real life too. You know, these people exist in real life.
100%,
they're organizing in real life. And if, you know, it might not necessarily be something to be concerned about, but there is a point where it becomes something that you need to be concerned about, because it's not just online. If the Capitol riot showed us anything, it's that, you know, these people are telegraphing what they're going to do online and then doing it in real life. And that's a process that's built up over the last several years, but like you said, like that cycle is accelerating. QAnon, the scale at which that it grew is absurd. I mean, you have going from you know, a few people posting on 4chan in 2017 to the Capitol riots in less than 3 years. And you know, and QAnon, you know, it's broken apart right now. A lot of the Republican Party is restructuring after the Capitol riots, and it's not quite clear what is going to become the new big tent. And it's probably not going to be QAnon, because they're being ridiculed for, you know, being false prophets in a lot of different groups. But there is something that is going to come and band these people together again. And it might not be the Patriot Party, because, you know, there are definitely conversations in online circles that honestly center more around the Patriot Party is not radical. It's not, you know, exactly. It's not a third position. But it is something to keep an eye on, because when this restructuring happens and coalesces, it's going to happen like that. It's going to be extremely fast, and it's going to lead to real world consequences very quickly. So we need to be focusing very hard on the things that we believe are the next step to that, you know, that recoalescence, whether it's in 2022 or 2024.
Excellent. Well, this is a great setup, because I want to dig into your piece a little bit here, because what you just mentioned there, when you're talking about, you say the next thing that comes around, it might not be the Patriot Party, right? And I think that this is one of the difficulties in reporting on these things, right? It's like you have this thing that, you know, it might turn out that this just is a complete flop, and it is absolutely nothing but a grift. On the other hand, right, if you take well, I mean, you know what, people in the, you know, I don't know, even 4 years ago were saying, well, you know, in the kind of 1 in 100th chance that, well, we're no longer in the 1 in 100 its chance anymore. It's almost like a coin flip at this point about where, you know, where things are going to land. So let me set up for people who have not checked out his piece yet. Like, again, I kind of 100% encourage you to kind of get over to itsalienmuse.com. That's itsalienmuse.com. Check out all his stuff. Read this for yourself. You get the link in the show notes. But I wanted to kind of like set the stage for folks who haven't had a chance to read this yet. I want to read a couple paragraphs from your piece, and then kind of hand it over to you a little bit to kind of walk us through kind of what you're doing in this piece and why you're focusing on this, you know, these individuals in particular, kind of what they're doing in the state. So here's the setup. So now deplatformed and fully radicalized, tens of millions of Trump supporters wandered the internet wastes looking for a new grift to hitch their wagon to. Can I just say, you're a freaking great writer too. I just wanted to say that. I want to get that out of the way here too as well. I mean, I actually enjoy reading your stuff too, which is all the good. But anyways.
That means a lot. That means a lot.
Yeah, I really do. So here you go. The American right is in a period of flux with Western chauvinists, neo-Nazis, QAnon supporters, and run-of-the-mill MAGA conservatives all huddling together in the same Telegram chats as the dust settles. It's impossible to say what the end result of this atomization will be or what the next incarnation of American fascism will look like. What we do know for sure is that we have very little time to react when we do find out. After all, it took less than 3 years for QAnon to go from a few people following Q drops in 4chan, like you're saying, to a dangerous mass delusion. And there's every indication that this cycle will only accelerate. Already less than a month after Biden administration took power, a new political entity is beginning to form, a movement that has the capability to swallow up and further radicalize the base of former MAGA coalition. Conservatives, evangelicals, Proud Boys, QAnon, and constitutionalists all gathered together under one big tent once again, this time turning their numbers toward disrupting the very core of the American electoral system. Joined together by their support for former President Donald Trump and very little else, the new Patriot Party is ascendant among the American right. So there's the kind of setup. So take us into kind of this piece and what you're kind of laying out for all of us.
Sure. So when I was writing this piece, you know, I spent a lot of time, too much time, probably. I have a hyper deficit disorder. You know, I tend to focus on these things. And I spent a lot of time in the Telegram pages after the January 6th riots, because what happened was the platforms that these people are normally on, Twitter, Facebook especially, had just finished, you know, their great purges where, you know, they dropped a lot of QAnon believers. They dropped a lot of Trump supporters. They obviously banned President Trump from Twitter, which was a huge deal. And so Telegram was kind of the place that they went, because frankly, Telegram has a long history of supporting, you know, far right wing movements in terms of free speech. They deleted a lot of channels semi-recently, but they're mostly all back now. They don't actually, you know, do any policing on that stuff. And so it was interesting to see them all kind of gathered together in one place. And I was able to kind of, you know, get an idea of what the coalescence was looking like. And more I was seeing Patriot Party stuff. And it had been talked about, you know, kind of like as a joke in like the lame duck period where, you know, people were like, we're going to form our own political party. And they were handing around, and you've probably seen it by now, the B-Dare lion.
Oh, yeah.
yeah, which is directly ripped from a white supremacist website. Yep. Like the Trump campaign used it once, but it's the B-Dare lion. It's very common in those circles of Trump supporters. And so I was kind of like, you know, this seems like, with the collapse of QAnon, you know, QAnon was kind of the big tentpole crazy faction. You know, they were the most radical adherents. They were the most dedicated. They were the most likely to do things in real life. And so with that, you know, kind of breaking apart, you know, there are still some QAnon believers, but they've mostly changed their beliefs, mm-hmm. you know, in the shape of, you know, after Biden got elected. And, you know, now it's kind of an open field where it's like, oh, you know, the Proud Boys are under attack, you know, QAnon is under attack, you know, people don't like MAGA people anymore. And so they're kind of trying to figure out, you know, what their next steps are. And like I said, like with QAnon, it was so fast because all of these people were online and being radicalized online at, you know, so much faster than anything we've ever seen.
Well, you know, and like on this point too, as well, let me about the quickness of it and how this might seem like it's just kind of like a joke or just kind of like a floated idea that's randomly out there. You know, what was also kind of like a floated idea, which seemed like a joke at first. The Space Force, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. Exactly. I mean,
that sounded like a good idea. Let's see what's happening. Lo and behold, here we are, right? And the same kind of stuff that we see, you know, this is possible moving forward too, as well. Sorry to interrupt, but yeah.
No. You make a good point. You know, there is no differentiation between online and real life anymore. It's the same thing, because things that happen online have consequences in real life. And, you know, it is easy, I think, to ignore QAnon and Boogaloo and all these like weird miasma of the internet ideas, but they have weight. And, you know, we've seen, it would be disastrous of us not to learn this lesson. You know, we've seen incel shootings. We've seen QAnon believers taking action in real life. You know, there are dedicated MAGA supporters who are doing things in real life. You know, this is a pathway to radicalization. And people have been saying this for years, you know, since Gamergate, basically,
yeah, right.
Is where you can trace the line back to. But, you know, with the quickness with which everyone was banned and those communities fell apart, Telegram was really the only place to go to. And so everybody's there now. And when I mean everybody, I mean, you know, you have totally normal run-of-the-mill MAGA supporters, you know, your grandma, your aunt, your uncle, they, you know, lots of QAnon in there, but also Proud Boys and Boogaloo Boys and Patriot Front and Groypers, you know, all these distributed platforms of radicalization. And they're all, you know, fighting for those people who aren't as fully radicalized as they are.
Well, and so I should really say about this too, as well, just to give you a sense of kind of the way that we have this kind of like fractured media landscape too, as well, which we'll get into a little bit later too. But mm-hmm. when you say everybody is on Telegram, I guarantee you, right, there's a vast majority of Americans out there have no idea what Telegram even is.
Right. Mm-hmm, absolutely.
Which is precisely the issue you're pointing to, right? What's happening online is precisely real life when it comes to this organizing, and we can't see it, or at least the vast majority of people, like Americans, don't see it.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's why, you know, the anti-fascist work and in terms of, you know, our own extremist reporting is very important, because it takes a lot of time to build up the kind of knowledge that is necessary to track these groups.
Yeah.
And it's not something that, you know, mainstream news is flexible enough to do. Things happen so fast on them. You know, the Patriot Party coalesced in less than 2 months. And they're now having rallies, they're running for city government and state government. And that's not something that you can just kind of hop into. You have to have access to the channels, and you have to have, you know, been there while they build up, because, you know, now, you know, I've been following, you know, a few Patriot chats for a while, and with the increased coverage, like, it's become clear to them that there are, you know, infiltrators, you know, Antifa infiltrators, mm-hmm. and people who are watching those chats. And so eventually those are going to go private, and it's important that someone be looking for as long as possible so that they can continue to track that pathway. Because Telegram is a new addition to the radicalization pipeline, but it's not a new service. You know, they're just jumping to whatever is most convenient for them and whatever is the least censored. You know, so they want as much like freedom to pitch their, you know, right wing propaganda to unradicalized people as possible. And so it's important for local journalists to be covering it and to have people covering it explicitly, so that, you know, when big, you know, big stories do break and national reporters are covering this, that they have something to build on, you know, and be able to access that knowledge in one place. And that's really
absolutely
what I try.
You know, this is something that, you know, we use this concept, right? When we first started publishing Raging Chicken, like the whole idea, we had this idea about break and push, right? And the idea was that obviously our platform is not kind of like a national platform, but what we have access to are the kind of like the local machinations of what's actually happening. And by building relationships with these broader platforms is that once you're able to break something that nobody else has got there, you're going to push it to those relationships to try to kind of give it some more exposure beyond it, right? And thinking about, you know, really like a media ecosystem that works in that kind of way is absolutely so critical. Because, you know, one of the things that's so important about the reporting that you've been doing, it's not like, I think it's making its way into the enough of the mainstream now, like the mainstream press and kind of even like statewide press, that we have a problem with white supremacy, right? We have our white nationalists, right? There's these extremists, right? That's true. However, the reporting that you're doing is actually getting us into like, this is who we're talking about. This is where they are and what they're doing. Right.
Exactly.
Because that's the part that's been missing for so long, as kind of local newsrooms have been gutted. Right. There is no budget anymore for kind of investigative work. And so it only takes people who are kind of like really motivated. Right. To actually dig into this stuff, to be able to expose some of the stuff, because that's really where it matters, because you want to stop them before they get out of the city council. Right. Not
absolutely.
Like 5 years down the road.
No, absolutely. I think you hit it right on the head. You know, what I've tried as I've developed as a journalist, you know, what I've just like kind of thought that my role has been, I think that when you're covering far right extremism specifically, you are doing a community defense as journalism, you know. So these are people who are dangerous in your communities. They're not just people who show up to the Capitol riots, you know.
Right.
They are dangerous in their own communities, you know. And so as locals, you know, you want to be able to provide that coverage to, you know, like you said, like push and break to larger networks, where, you know, you have the capability to say, here's the information that I've gathered. Now, you know, Zach Rail is at the Capitol riots. I can just push that right out to you. And you can have that local investigative reporting without, you know, like, obviously, like, it's not ideal that they're not having, you know, that they're gutting local papers, but like, that information has to get out to people. And like, I think that that's, you know, the role that we provide. And I think you made a great point about a media ecosystem, because there's great people all across Pennsylvania doing great work. And we've been, you know, finding each other. You know, there's Crow LB, who are up in Lehigh Valley, and they're doing fantastic work. Yep. Spotlight PA down with you guys in Harrisburg, and Raging Chicken have been doing fantastic stuff. And if we work together, we can create, you know, a base of knowledge for people to work off of.
100%. I can't tell you how long I have been kind of like barking up that tree. Right. And to say mm-hmm. that, you know, I mean, one of the lessons I think, I mean, again, we're going to come back to this once again, kind of a little bit later. But one of the things that I think is so critical is that one of the lessons we can learn from what happened with the right is that you talk about this really network of kind of interdependence and kind of mutually supporting folks doing the work. Yes, they've got billionaires and things like that. I get that we don't necessarily have those folks who want to donate to the left on this score. Right. Mm-hmm. But the way that this kind of the ecosystem works, right, it becomes that much more important for those on the, from my view at least, for those of us on the left, to do things like this, right, where we're kind of like cross-platforming and making sure that we're kind of amplifying and using what we have to get this kind of message out, right? Because there is nothing more critical in my mind for what's happening right now, the crises that we happen, and they're happening, like you said, in our community. Pennsylvania sent like the second largest number of people to these Capitol protests, and you know what? They didn't just kind of appear at the Capitol and then come back to Pennsylvania is Pennsylvania. They were here before doing that work in our communities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's a great example, because when the riots happened, you know, I dedicated a lot of time to open source intelligence work. Mm-hmm. You know, I was working with people on Twitter to try and locate and identify individuals who had committed crimes like during the Capitol riots, like through video and through anything that was, you know, openly available to journalists. And we, like, spent a lot of time focusing on this guy who, you know, people called the Gray Pack, who had thrown a fire extinguisher at a police officer. And at the time, we thought that it was Brian Sicknick. It turned out not to be. But it was still, you know, incredible piece of open source intelligence work. And it turned out he's from Chester. Yeah. Like, it was like 25 minutes away. And I was like, this guy lives down the block from me.
Yeah.
You know, that's, and they are not only violent insurrectionists when they're at the Capitol. You know, they are doing violence to people in their daily lives. It's very common among the people who are involved here. And so it, you know, if someone lived down the street from me who threw a fire extinguisher at a cop's head, I'd probably want to know about it. And, you know, that's the kind of like community awareness that we're trying to provide. You know, knowing who these people are makes our community safer. And I think that that's like critically important, even if, you know, you might not have a big, you know, Tribune Publishing or whatever behind you, you know, it's still a difference that we can make.
100%. Absolutely. So tell us a little bit about these, you know, you focus on kind of like two individuals in particular, three, if we want to make an argument, two individuals in particular in here that you kind of take us in. Why these folks, and what did you see happening? The stories that these two people are telling us.
Sure. I think that, you know, the two people are Richard Schwetz, who is the leader of the Lehigh Valley Proud Boys, and Dave Stukowski, who is on Facebook as Dave the Patriot.
He's based out of Philadelphia, right?
Yeah, he's right here in Philly. Yep. And they're really interesting characters, although they are very different, because I think they represent two diametrically opposed futures for the Patriot Party. You know, Richard Schwetz, who is someone, you know, candidly that I've covered for a few months now, he was at, you know, the Marconi Plaza protests and participated in those street fights as a member of the Philadelphia Proud Boys. And, you know, he was at the event in West Philly that they were trying to launch. And he was also at the Old City Flash March. You know, all that information is in my Twitter. And you can go through the history there. But he's someone that I'm very familiar with. And he actually came up on my radar for J6 because he actually wasn't at the D.C. Capitol. He was in Harrisburg at the state capitol. And I think that the radicalization that is happening at the Harrisburg State Capitol roundups is incredibly underreported and incredibly important, because so many of the people who are involved there become, you know, really violent right-wing extremists. And Schwetz is one of them. You know, he is on video assaulting journalists at DC rallies before J6. He is like on Parler lying about Zach Rail showing up to the Capitol riots, which if Rail is arrested, makes Schwetz a co-conspirator. You know, like, those are serious crimes.
Yep.
And he has proven, like, time and time again that he's, you know, someone who is actively working to radicalize people and to get them to join the Proud Boys. He's a very proud boy and like really wants people to be involved. Yeah, right, exactly. But it's, you know, he is someone who might not have been there, but is arguably more radical than some of the people who were there. And he has a much larger part to play in the Patriot Party, because he is one of the few people in Pennsylvania who are running for state government under the Patriot Party. I've gone in the financial records. I've gone to the, you know, the campaign commissions. It does not seem like he's signed up for any kind of financial disclosures for his campaign. On his Telegram page where he announced that he named the wrong congressional district, yeah. Also the wrong opponent.
I've got that circled on like on the arc. I was like, wait a minute, that's not the 44th.
I'm not, you know, great with this kind of stuff. You know, maybe I did the wrong research. Maybe I didn't get what I needed to get. But it sure seems like he's not really running for Congress.
Well, no. He says the 44th, and like it only takes like a Wikipedia page away to see that that's the ninth that he's talking about. You know, I mean,
exactly.
It's bizarre.
Dumb. Yes. He's not. Yeah, but like what I think he's doing, regardless of whether or not he's running for office, is. He's perpetuating the grift of the Patriot Party. You know, yeah. He's selling T-shirts, he's selling hats, he's selling, you know, all this memorabilia with like his funny little campaign slogan on them about how funny he thinks it is that his name is Dick Schwetz. And he continues to, you know, basically use it as a platform to vet people for his Proud Boys chapter in Lehigh Valley, which is a tactic that he learned from Zach Rail. You know, Zach Rail and his Proud Boys were extremely well known for bringing in reactionary groups. That's why they went to Marconi. You know, they went to talk to the reactionary South Philly Italians who were there, and they picked up several members from those rallies. You know, Sal Conti is a member. He was involved in the Marconi Plaza rallies. That was the first time that Schwetz came down. So it's a tactic that is growing in the Proud Boys. And even like you can look in other Patriot Party groups. The New Jersey one is overrun with Proud Boys. You know, they are using this big tent as a proving ground and a vetting space for Proud Boys. And that's something that he is like very actively involved in. And that's why I decided to cover him.
This is such an important point that you're making here, because also in terms of the arc of how this Patriot Party kind of end up getting covered, because I think right now it's getting set up, at least in some media narratives right now, that, okay, the Patriot Party, will it be a thing or not? Right. And then eventually when it collapses on its own grift, maybe, I mean, like, again, it's that's a shot, you know, that is a direction that it could certainly set up to go. And then people be like, see, it was nothing, but it couldn't do anything. This is like, we're back to our two party system. Meanwhile, the Proud Boys have picked up like several hundred members. Mm-hmm. Right. And that's really the, like, as you mentioned, that's the pipeline. And if you look at, you know, the history of kind of like how white nationalist groups, how other extremist organizations, how the Klan operated, it's the same exact pattern, right?
That's a perfect example. The Klan is a fantastic example, because in the second iteration of the Klan, this is actually an extremely, this is a perfect example, Kevin. This is awesome. Because the second Klan, which I'm sure you know, started off as a grift. Started off as a way to sell rings and T-shirts and parties. And like, I think at that point, there were like 5 million Americans in the Klan. And they did it because it was like a white people's fraternity. And, you know, looking at the Patriot Party, you can see the exact same thing happening, where you're providing cover for these right-wing extremists to kind of, you know, meet up with a bunch of MAGA people and interact with them and get to, you know, vet them and know how radical they are and try and radicalize them a little bit more. And then maybe you can pull them into your cool adult frat drinking club. And that actually, you know, and then you guys can hang out in plate carriers out front of the Capitol. And like, it's very clearly what they're doing, and it has absolute precedent. You're totally right.
Absolutely. So we've got these folks too. And so if they end up running, like what I find fascinating too, I was poking around a little bit, kind of after rereading your piece ahead of today, I was poking around a little bit on Stokowski, right? Right, Stokowski. I always get his name wrong. But as his page, what's fascinating about the way that he crafts himself on social media too, as well, it's like, it's like all hip and all kind of like, you know, a little bit like a 50s greaser, you know, that, you know, you're kind of like, maybe you're kind of.
He loves that he looks like Johnny Depp.
Well, that's just it, right? It's like, yeah, it's like, yeah, great. It's like Johnny Depp crossed with West Side Story. And but with all this, you know, very conscious identity crafting, right, about coolness. Right. And sure. And that becomes part of, like, once again, becomes one of the covers for kind of bringing people in, because people want to be liked. Right. If you can like the cool kid on the block is going to be kind of like give you some attention, you know, come on in.
Yeah. And I describe him as a QAnon influencer, which I think is like, you know, kind of something that is very new and has really had no time to build up, but has kind of like built itself organically as the QAnon community continues to siphon off from different disparate communities on the internet. You know, there are people who are from the New Age community and who are from, you know, like the online film community, which is where Stukowski's from. You know, it has this insane ability to pull people in. You know, it's actually interesting. One of the reactionary groups that the Proud Boys were meeting up with in Marconi was called the Gravy Seals. And, you know, they're South Philly reactionaries. They're Italians. They love Christopher Columbus. One of them, the main ones, Ronnie Teeny, his sister is a QAnon influencer in Los Angeles with like 35,000 followers. And so it all kind of connects, you know. And the thing about QAnon influencers that's really interesting to me is that, like you said, they are kind of shading it in this kind of aesthetic of, you know, it's cool to be QAnon, you know, it's cool to be a Trump supporter, it's cool to, you know, be on these Facebook groups. And it's especially interesting to me because I doubt that Schwetz and Stukowski know that each other exists. But they're
really
entirely dedicated to the Patriot Party grip.
Really? That's interesting.
They operate on totally different platforms. Like, Stukowski is entirely on Facebook. He loves Facebook. You know, he's been trying to make Patriot Party groups work for months now, and they keep getting deleted. But that's where his audience is. I think he's got an audience of about 5,000 people there between, like, two or three active Facebook channels, which is bigger than Schwetz's audience. You know, Schwetz is very much, you know, I think there's like 400 people in the Patriot Party PA group and about 600 people in the Lehigh Valley Proud Boys group. And so
600 people, did you say? 600?
I think so. Yeah. Maybe 400 to 600 is somewhere.
That's still pretty substantial for
it. It's substantial.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a little bit smaller than the Philadelphia Proud Boys chat, which I think is about 1,100 followers. And, you know, a lot of those are lurkers. A lot of those are people like me who are, you know, collecting information on them. But it is a significant following, but Stukowski's following is much larger. But I doubt that they know each other exists because they have totally diametrically opposed views of what the Patriot Party should be, except that they're both grifters. That is the only thing that like connects the two of them, you know? There's no reason that they would both be in this party except that they're trying to make money off these people, you know? And they are the two different futures of the Patriot Party, you know? There is a huge ideological battle going on right now at the Patriot Party between QAnon and Western chauvinism in general, you know, like the Proud Boys and the Groypers, the Patriot Front, that kind of stuff. And, you know, they just serve as such perfect foils of each other without even knowing that each other exists, that it's just incredibly interesting to me. And Stukowski is, I think, less radical than Schwetz is. He, like I said, he's an influencer, you know, he was happy to be at the rallies, but I didn't see any video of him actually like storming the Capitol. You know, he's using it for likes and to get clicks. And like that, and to make money selling T-shirts, and it's very similar to what Schwetz is doing, but it's much more online, inward focused, which is very much the QAnon thing, you know.
Well, I would say too, as well, is like when I see Stukowski's work, it's like I look at him and I say, I hear somebody who grew up on Milo. Right. I
mean, absolutely.
He seems like cut from like that cloth, where when you look at Schwetz, like he's the kind of person that makes me super concerned. Right. Because they're doing. And, you know, again, a lot of the Proud Boy chapters have done this. Right. They do this on the ground organizing. And I remember, you know, growing up in a kind of, you know, central New York, Utica, New York, and then kind of living in Syracuse for a while. You know, there used to be a military base. Fort Drum was kind of not far from Syracuse, New York. And you had a group of these kind of white supremacist neo-Nazis. Right. Who were, you know, kind of enlisted soldiers at Fort Drum who used to come down right into Syracuse in their time off. And that's what they would do. They would recruit. Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they were all about this kind of like, you know, one-to-one contact, right? Making a show of things, being kind of like out there wanting to fight, right? But also looking for those kind of stragglers, of those people that they could actually bring into the fold as kind of influencers. And that's what this guy reminds me of.
Yeah, absolutely. And he, you know, I'm sure he's a nice guy. Nice guy, you
whatever,
know, but
I
like
mean...
he is serving as kind of like a useful idiot for these people. You know, he's drawing people in to further radicalization of the right wing without showing them any of the other stuff. You know, it's all about, you know, save the children. It's all about, you know, protect the country, protect the president, that kind of stuff. But once you are in those groups, you're going to be invited into more radical groups. Eventually, you know, you're going to be courted for those. And that's where you get, you know, the, you know, follow the cabal stuff and the hardcore white supremacy that is really at the base of this entire coalition of MAGA supporters. You know, it's really like that and their support for Donald Trump are the only two things binding them together. And it is Dave Stukowski is a danger in that he puts on a pretty face for QAnon and for the Patriot Party in general, which is not what they are.
Yeah, 100%. And so, I mean, this might be a little bit kind of beyond even kind of a knowability at this point or kind of thought about this. But, you know, if you kind of look at, say, the Patriot Party as kind of one, say, resting ground for this stuff. I mean, do you see any other similar kinds of developments out there that are kind of like ready to receive, so to speak? Or, I mean, I've been of the mind of like, look, there's, you know, the Patriot Party is the one we're kind of naming it as a kind of a pointing place at this point, because that's where, you know, they're jockeying for this. But we could very much, you know, just like with QAnon, see something that's completely new, right? Kind of emerge from the edges that is going to kind of come in. Do you have any sense of that?
Well, I think that, you know, and like you said, it's difficult to tell, but we're going to find out pretty soon. You know,
yeah,
I think by 2022,
right,
we'll know for sure. But the Patriot Party has the most momentum right now. It seems to have the most members. But there is also conversations in Telegram chats and, you know, outside of Patriot Party groups as to whether or not it's sufficiently radical. You know, that seems to be the main concern, as opposed to, you know, this is full of Proud Boys and QAnon. Like, is that bad? No, they're not third positionists. You know, they believe in the electoral process. They believe that the thing for them to do is to achieve, you know, state and local government. Like, honestly, I think if we get the Patriot Party as a final result from all this, we'll be fine. Because they are at least, you know, not at the point where they're ready to do mass violence. They're much more focused on, you know, local politics. But, you know, when 2022 comes, if they don't do well, if they aren't perceived as doing as well as patriots would probably like them to, then there will be a new thing. But I don't think that there's anything online right now that is a receiver. There's a lot of givers, you know, like the constitutionalists are providing a lot of stuff to QAnon people to build that conspiracy. But I don't think that there's anyone that's actively recruiting as much as the Patriot Party and the Proud Boys. And they exist, you know, in a coalescence. So it's all about, you know, whatever comes out of the Patriot Party is probably going to be the next big thing. But I think it's too soon to really know for sure. But like, it's going to come. It's out there.
Yeah. I mean, well, you know, one of my reads on the Patriot Party is kind of, you know, in this kind of like Russian nesting dolls of grift kind of model, where you have, you know, there's a segment, I think, of, you know, elected officials now, kind of Republican Party on a national score, who actually see the grift of the Patriot Party as a way of kind of maintaining and kind of bolstering their own power, because it's a threat to the Republican establishment, right? It's a way of kind of like tamping down any kind of voices of moderation within the Republican Party, by basically saying, hey, look, if you know, you don't come this way, the Patriot Party is going to split our party, and then the Republican Party is done for two generations. So I think those folks are actually looking at the Patriot Party as a certain kind of leverage. The problem is, of course, with that grift within the grift, because now you've got like the Patriot Party who've got their own grift going, but there's a whole bunch of true believers and organizers that once they sniff that the elected officials, what they're seeing as Republicans who have sold out, the rhinos, right, are trying to use the Patriot Party as a way to kind of bolster their own, you know, their own, you know, popularity, their own power, those folks are going to be ready to go someplace else that's more radical.
Absolutely. These people are very disaffected. You know, they've a lot of them believe that the Republican Party sold them out, that, you know, everyone but Trump is against them. And that's, once again, you know, the Republican universe circles around Trump like a black hole. You know, everything depends on what he does. So if he ends up moving away from the Patriot Party, which is what he signaled, you know, he signaled that he doesn't want to build a third party. He'd much rather primary Republicans who are in office. If that happens, then there is more of a chance that the Patriot Party will fade away and be replaced by something else. But if he decides to throw his weight behind them, then that is a disaster for the Republican Party. It will destroy them. Because I would imagine that he could get 30 to 35% of the vote easily with the Patriot Party, you know, and the Republican Party cannot survive that. So it's in their best interest to court Trump and the people who support him, which means QAnon, and continue to draw from that voter base. Because, you know, the Republicans are the minority now. They can't afford to lose a single vote. They need to do whatever it takes to get as many voters as possible. And that means doing what Trump wants. It's not, you know, what they're signaling right now. It wasn't what they were signaling at the J6 riots, where they were like, we're done with Trump. We have no more interest in this. But they don't have a choice, because of, like, either Trump joins with them and they become the party of QAnon, because those are his supporters, or he leaves and joins the Patriot Party. The Patriot Party becomes the party of QAnon, and the Republican Party collapses.
Yep.
You know, those are the only two things that can happen here.
Well, there we go. We'll be kind of committed. I want to shift gears a little bit. I want to talk a little bit about kind of the media landscape here. But before I do, just kind of want to give a couple little announcements here, a little break. I want to remind you, listen to Raging Chickens out to Coop Live, and you can help support this podcast and support everything we do by going to patreon.com/rcpress. You become a member for those $5 a month. Just, kind of chip in where you can. And if you don't want to become kind of a patron right at this point, but you want to throw us a little tip in our tip jar, you can actually go over to paypal.me/rcpress and throw us a couple bucks here and there. But what you could do for us right now, especially if you're watching live on YouTube, you make sure you hit that subscribe button, you hit that like button for the episode, and you hit that bell to make sure that every time that we go live, that you know what's there, you can help kind of join the show. And want to give you some programming notes here a little bit. This coming Monday and on to Coop Live, I'm welcoming Sean O'Leary to the show. Sean O'Leary is a senior researcher with the Ohio River Valley Institute. You may have kind of seen this report that's come out. The Philly Inkies basically kind of gave them a huge shout out in their their anti-fracking editorial, right? Well, I mean, that's probably a little far, but whatever. I mean, well, I'm gonna push it if I can, right? But so he'll be on there talking about the new report that's coming out from them called Appalachia's Natural Gas Counties: The Natural Gas Fracking Boom and Appalachia's Lost Economic Decade. And you know, that one will be on both on the Podbean app and on kind of YouTube, so you can actually call in that night on Monday. And for the first ever, you're hearing it this first time, right? I've been teasing this last couple show, but on Monday, March 8th, right? That's a week from this coming Monday. I'm welcoming State Representative Elizabeth Fiedler and State Senator Nikhil Saval to the show. And we're going to be talking about the People's Budget and Progressive Organizing in PA. Like we've been talking about on Out to Coop Live now for a while, as it seems like, especially after this election, we've seen like Pennsylvania no longer has a squad, right? We've got a battalion building, progressive kind of elected officials in here that are connected to social movements. And so we're going to be talking a little bit about that on March 8th. And once again, that'll be on Podbean app and the YouTube channel as well. So if you can get out there and support the show by going to patreon.com/rcpress and show us some love. Make sure you hit that subscribe button on the YouTube channel right now too as well. I used to suck at this stuff and now I'm just like, whatever. It's like random. I was like, I hate saying those things, but you know.
And definitely check that out. Nikhil Saval especially is a revelation. He is fantastic. It's going to be so cool to have them on the show.
Well, it's going to be awesome to have those two on the show. We had Rick Kajewski on the show back in the fall, kind of like ahead of the election. And, you know, literally, I was going through the kind of list of folks I'd like to kind of include in that discussion. I'm like, man, it's just going to get unwieldy because it's just like, you know, we got so many folks here. So, I can't wait to talk to him. I know Sean Kitchen, actually, back in before when Elizabeth Fiedler, Summer Lee and Sarah Innamorato first ran, because it was the first kind of like chink in the, you know, the dike that's breaking, you know, of kind of like open up the old school Pennsylvania politics. Sean Kitchen interviewed them in Harrisburg and ahead of them. And, you know, people were telling, you know, Sean kept on saying, it's like, they're going to win. And people were like laughing at him, like, yeah, whatever, man. Keep dreaming, lefty.
I don't know.
And, you know, Elizabeth Fiedler, like, I know that she's been doing nothing but kind of digging in Philadelphia, helping support kind of other candidates and campaigns, which has been fantastic. I know that she and Nikhil Saval have worked together really closely with Rick Kajewski and other folks within the community. It's been absolutely fantastic. And, you know, I just go around the state to see what's going on. I mean, some races we lost this past year, I mean, the movements keep on growing as candidates actually come out with, like, you know, something to say and a program that's actually for people, as opposed to, you know, what we normally are used to here, but
definitely.
But anyways, that's far stream from our conversation. But yeah, absolutely. I'm looking forward to that conversation. Looking forward to talking to Sean O'Leary this coming Monday too as well. But you know, one of the things I wanted to kind of give you a second, you know, you sent me this piece ahead of the show today from CNN. I had not seen this yet, where CNN was actually kind of, you know, digging into the Patriot Party, particularly what's going on in Harrisburg. And it kind of like prompted us a little kind of like pre-show discussion about a little about how we should cover this stuff kind of in the media. But, you know, can you give us a little bit of a background of that CNN piece and kind of like a contrast of like, you know, how, like what we do kind of like kind of on the left, progressive left, even the broad left, if you want to say it like this, to be thinking about how we should be covering these and how we should not be covering these things, or what kind of actually media coverage is actually a disservice to what needs to happen right now.
Yeah, absolutely. The CNN piece, it came out yesterday. It was written, among other people, by Elle Reeve, who was on the scene there. And obviously, like, she did fantastic on the scene work. It's nice to see this stuff covered at all. And so, like, I want to preface with that, mm-hmm. you know, at least they are paying attention. But the response that I saw, you know, obviously I'm in these chats, and they were exuberant, you know, that it had happened. They were very excited. It emboldened them in a way that concerned me a little bit and made me think a lot about.
Let's be clear, by them you mean here like the Proud Boys and the right and things
like
that. Proud
Boys and Patriot Party.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep.
They, you know, they were like, there's photos on my Twitter, but it's, you know, yeah, thank you, Dick, for doing all this for us. You know, you got us on CNN, even though they hate CNN. You know, they're always like so excited to be on it. And it raised an interesting question of, you know, how exactly should we, like you said, how should we be covering these people? What is emboldening them and what is, you know, keeping them from doing things that are, you know, that are more dangerous, that don't, you know, make them want to escalate their activities. And I don't pretend to have the answer. You know, I try to cover them granularly and very closely and kind of recognizing what they are. You know, the Proud Boys are a SLPC designated hate group. I don't reach out to them for comment. I don't speak to them. I have no interest in hearing their opinion about, you know, about anything really. And seeing the way that CNN covered it gave them much more of a platform than I probably would have appreciated. You know, I think that it's very important that we don't allow these people to speak about their policies on their own terms, because we've learned this is the same lesson that the media was supposed to learn during the Trump era. They had 4 years to learn this lesson. That platforming these people specifically, you know, not covering them, platforming, allowing them to talk freely about their views to your audience is a disservice as a journalist. Obviously, they should be given the ability to speak, to do whatever they want, but it doesn't free them from the consequences of those actions or from being covered in a way that those actions portray. You know, Schwetz talks a good game. He's very charming. He loves that his name makes people laugh, and he uses that to raise his campaign. But he's a violent guy. He has a criminal record. He is on video in December attacking journalists with the Proud Boys. I watched him attack journalists with the Proud Boys at Marconi. You know, I was threatened by a bunch of his friends there. They followed me back to my car. And, you know, when you're covering them, you can't be allowing them to push their platform. It has to be more about them than it is with them. And I think that the CNN article had a lot of Schwetz in it, you know, a lot of him explaining what the Proud Boys were. And, you know, obviously, like, a lot of that stuff was still not very good for them. They're gonna spin it whatever way they can. But, you know, there's a scene in that video that is just astounding to me where they come up after the rally back to the parking lot where the Proud Boys or where the Patriot Party is. And some of them have changed into Proud Boys outfits, Lehigh Valley Proud Boys sweaters. And it's because they claim that their cars were vandalized. There are videos of nails under their tires and stuff, but nothing more than that, really. And Elle Reeve asks Schwetz, she's like, why are the Proud Boys here? Why did they know how to come here? And he says, I don't know. I don't know those guys. And that is not good for them, because you would think that they would want to know, like, whether or not their literal leader actually supports them or even acknowledges that they exist to a CNN crew. You know, he says he doesn't know them. He's the leader. You know, he's on, I have screen grab videos of that Telegram page where he says, I am a Proud Boy. I have been a Proud Boy for a long time and I will always be a Proud Boy. So like, that doesn't look good for them. And that's something that I want to cover, because it proves that these people don't actually care about the communities that they're building. You know, Dick Schwetz is a grifter. And he wants to make money off this, and he wants to be popular. And so portraying him in a way that, you know, legitimizes his political views, continues to legitimize the same political views that he's had for 4 years, you know, is the same mistake that the media made with Trump. It's you know, allowing these people to feel like their ideas are being heard and being considered seriously, which I don't believe that they should be. You know?
Well, and I think you couldn't have said this better. I mean, this is like, I think this is right on the money about making distinction. I like how you put this, has to be more about them than with them. Because what happened, you know, the minute you plug somebody into the, like, let's see this side and let's see that side, once you plug them into that kind of reporting of format, right, then you've basically affirmed them as a legitimate contributor to that discourse, right? I mean, that's kind of, that's how I look at this. Is like, once you've included them as like, well, here's one side of the story, let's see what's on the other side. Who's to know? The truth is probably somewhere in between. Well, somewhere in between right now gets like a lot of people hurt, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And so, I look at this and I say, you know, that's precisely the issue. And I think that this is a really knotty problem. And I remember Rick Perlstein kind of a couple years back had a piece that was talking about this a little bit, about watching the destruction of American institutions, particularly ones that we need, things like real journalism, right? That's not just the kind of the both-sidersism reporting, but actually has to make decisions about how things are covered and then be willing to accept these criticisms. Because like, this is the kind of stuff, well, why would you not like platform? Why would you give the equal space to someone like the Proud Boys to cover, to hear what they've got to say, when it's pretty clear these are people who should stand outside the boundaries, right, of kind of what we consider as acceptable within a democratic context. Like you said, you want to speak about this garbage, like you're going to speak about it, right? There's a constitutional protection that gives you that particular right. But God knows if that we have any kind of like, institutional respect for democracy, right? You know, and I mean, using that in the broadest sense, is that, you know, there's certain things that one has to defend. And that is thing, when people are talking about the destruction of the very thing that you're supposedly upholding, they are outside the bounds, and we have to expose them as, say, corrupting influences and ones that are seeking for the downfall of the thing that we claim to love.
Absolutely. And you know, it's as old as fascism itself. You exactly. can go back to the very basic writings of Nazi propagandists to explicitly say that freedom of speech, it is important. I want to baseline that everyone should have freedom of speech. But Nazis will specifically use freedom of speech to push their ideas and take advantage of that. And so as a society, you know, we need to be listening to these ideas and being like, this is outside of our political paradigm. You know, it was really politically and socially unpopular to be a Trump supporter for about 4 years. And then J6 happened. And now it is, you are outside. You don't have any respect for our basic institutions of democracy. And so you're outside of the political conversation, you know, and I shouldn't be expected to consider your ideas like they are equal to, you know, other less politically destructive ideas, you know, because you're talking about the foundations of our democracy. And that is something that matters to a lot of people. And you need to be willing to defend that at the expense of, you know, hearing this one person's opinion. He can give it. He can say it all he wants, but it doesn't mean that you have to listen, you know? And I think that that's very important when you're talking about the Proud Boys and about the Patriot Party in particular, because they've learned this lesson, you know? Schwetz loves when people report on him. He loves when they make fun of his name. He loves, like, when he gets these little, you know, snippets in news coverage, because it legitimizes him and it legitimizes his group's goals, you know? And so we need to be unflinching in being, you know, these ideas are wrong. You know, we need to be, I don't know. I think that I receive sometimes some criticism from good journalists who are, you know, I think that sometimes you editorialize a little bit. I think sometimes you have, you know, a bias against right-wing people. And I have a bias against right-wing extremism.
I'll just say.
You know, like I have a bias against that because it's damaging to our society. And I think that our society should be, you know, something that is protected and nurtured, not something that we're like actively looking to destroy and replace with totalitarian rule. And that's what these people want. You know, they love the boot on their neck. They are happy to do whatever it takes to get to that position. And I don't think that we should be considering those ideas seriously as part of the political discussion. They can have them, but it doesn't mean that I have to cover them like they're equal to, you know, Bernie Sanders or even Joe Biden. You know, they are not the same.
Right. And I also think that it's really important, some of the things that you were just talking about there. Like, I think that especially this moment right now in history calls for a kind of a broader kind of range of journalistic practice right now. Right. Okay. Because I will be the first one that will defend, like, the, you know, say the institutional press. Right. That basically saying that are doing best to do the objective reporting to kind of say, describe what's going on, dig into things and kind of not be kind of like, say, quote unquote, bias. I hate this, even the frame
it's
this
a,
discussion
it's a false
in this
paradigm.
Way.
I agree
right,
with you.
Right. Exactly. I mean, it was just whatever. But just put that aside, like the idea that, you know, a journalistic practice where you're trying to kind of like look at something as kind of like wide-eyed and kind of clear as possible without kind of like starting from a judgment on it. Right. And I do think that's absolutely critical, but right. You know, that works best in a context where you have a rich and a vibrant kind of journalistic practice where you have kind of all sorts of analysis coming from kind of different kinds of directions. Right. And look, there's a lot of people on the, like that are in the right press or some more conservative press who I would defend the work they're doing. I fundamentally disagree with what they're doing. Like, I fundamentally disagree with their positions and their ideas and things like this, but they're not fanning the flames of, like, you know, like fascism. Right. And so I can kind of like, whatever, respect, if you want to use that word or whatever, I could say, okay, that's within these bounds. But these folks that we're talking about here today are so far beyond that. And I do think there has to be a kind of, you know, again, you go back to kind of muckraking traditions, right? They basically said, like, I don't give a shit about your objectivity right now, right? We've got a bigger problem. There's people that are dying in the meatpacking plants, right? And, like, you know, hearing, like, the perspective of the PR of the factory is just not going to cut it. No pun intended, right? So, I mean, this is the moment that we're in is that we need folks that are going to grab on, right, and not let go and kind of expose this stuff and track it down with the full acknowledgement. Say, okay, yeah, like I cover this stuff, I focus on this, I invite you to this show, but I'm not going to invite, you know, these nut jobs to the show, right? Precisely because, absolutely, yes, I have an agenda and a perspective and so on, right? But we need people that are going to dig in on that to be part of that conversation because, you know, look, there is no other infrastructure at this point to do this work in my mind.
You're exactly right. And you know, I think there not being the infrastructure to support this kind of work makes it really critical that we re-examine our role as journalists and continue to question whether or not we should be supporting actively institutions, regardless of whether or not we have a bias, you know? Journalism for me is all about speaking truth to power. The most important thing that you can be doing is talking for someone who does not have a voice in society, you know? This actually like relates back to some coverage that I did earlier this year on the James Talib Dean homeless encampment in Philadelphia.
Yep.
And that was what really like set that in focus for me, was that like, how am I supposed to have an unbiased opinion on this? How am I supposed to have an unbiased opinion on the city clearly not doing anything to support people who are victims of the system? You know, that covering them in a way that presented it as a both sides argument, you know, these people should have housing, these people shouldn't have housing. That's a false dichotomy. You know, we have to be continually telling stories that are necessary in our communities. And we can't be thinking about, you know, what big media publishing thinks about it, because they're not on the ground. They don't interact with these problems on a daily basis, you know? And like I said at the beginning, they're not working with a full breadth of knowledge of the situation. You know, local reporters who are on the ground and who spend 6 to 8 months out of the year covering the same issues are going to have a much more informed opinion than a new national news publication that comes in 6 months later and writes one story.
Absolutely.
You know, we on the ground, at ground level, we're very privileged to be able to take in voices that may not have been heard before. And with relation to the Proud Boys and to the Patriot Party, they are literally conservatives. You know, they operate on the maintaining of the status quo and returning to a more conservative view of society. And when you look at American history, that is a view of society that continually disenfranchises women, LGBT people, trans people, with people of color. You know, those voices were not being heard. And as long as you are a political or like direct action based vanguard of that system, then I don't believe that it is in the community's best, you know, best case to hear your opinion as if it is fact or as if it is as valid as what the objective reporting will say, you know, because this is how we got into this situation. You know, we both sides it into, you know, QAnon being a collective delusion. You know, you have, if equal thing, if both things can be true, then neither of them can be true. And right. We need to have an objective, you know, community-based moral standard for what is right and what is wrong for the people that we live with. And the Proud Boys and the Patriot Party are actively attempting to disenfranchise those voices. And so I'm not going to act as if their opinion is valid. You know, I think that they're, you know, SLPC designated hate group members, and they should be covered that way. You know, that's as basic as it gets. You know, the Canadians think that they're terrorists, whether or not that's true or not, you know, they exist in that same paradigm. So we should be like really careful about how we cover them. And there might not be a right way to do that. You know, like my article may not have, you know, have emboldened them in the same way, but I can't know that because I don't know if they've read it, because they're not yelling about it on their Telegram pages,
right?
You know, but that information is getting to people who need it. And I would much rather, you know, have that than have them like them platforming my content, you know, because that means that I'm making them look good in some way, which is not my objective.
Right. Absolutely. Well, and look, and I think the work that you're doing too is like also educating, you know, folks in the progressive community too as well about some of these people, because like, you know, a lot of the, you know, the Proud Boys and these more extremist groups tend to kind of exist off the radar of a lot of folks, right? Not because people aren't, you know, even people that are fairly plugged in politically, right, with kind of, you know, issues that are going on in their communities and so on. Some of these things that are happening come kind of on the fringes, right, but are nonetheless feeding directly into the most reactionary and kind of, you know, violent kind of, you know, political tendencies in our culture right now have to be exposed. So, you know, I just think the work that you're doing is just absolutely kind of like just, you know, just bang up work, man.
Thank you so much. And I'm, you know, I'm going to continue to cover it. As long as there are Proud Boys in Philly, I'll be telling you what they're doing. So we can continue to hope to build that institutional local knowledge and hope that that can allow, you know, bigger corporations and people to make decisions in the future that are fully informed from the community.
Well, man, like, awesome. Well, man, as you continue to do your work, you know, I hope you come back on the show. I'd love to have you back on at some point, kind of talk about your reporting down the road. You know, like we said at the top of the show, the more we kind of build out these networks and connections, I think the better off we're all going to be. You know, and we've talked about this in Out the Coop quite a bit, where, you know, we see that, and I think we should celebrate the kind of the victories that we're having, and say the political, the electeds that we've kind of gotten in, the expanding of the squad to the battalion here in PA, right, getting progressive left folks kind of elected are really able to accomplish things. But we are sitting here in the kind of the, you know, the broader progressive community have our roles here too as well, to help out build the infrastructure here, because it's not all about what's happening in the house, it's also happening what's outside in the streets. So you know, I appreciate the work, you know, so much. And I appreciate, you know, kind of like coming on the show too. It's been, I'm so glad this worked out, because your stuff is fantastic, and you know, more power to you.
Thank you very much, Kevin. And your stuff is fantastic as well. We're really excited to continue to work with you guys and with RC in the future. It's going to be an awesome ride.
You can bet 100%. So I'll tell you what, you can check out, if you're listening live, make sure, I've got to say it once again, if you're listening right now on YouTube, make sure you hit that subscribe button, hit the like button for this episode. Make sure, right down there, make sure you kind of get this out, because the more that you get the subscriptions, you hit that like button, it pops up in the algorithm, and we help to amplify the voices like Jordan Hopkins we have here today. I want to remind you once again, check out his stuff. It goes to www.itsalienmuse.com. That's itsalienmuse.com. You can follow him on Twitter at @JHOP. That's @JHOP_PHL. His stuff on Twitter, if you're not following him on Twitter, you should be doing that right now. Like, I'll wait while you bring up your Twitter account and you make sure that you're following him right now, because that's where the action is. You can follow stuff step by step, and please kind of give him that much more of a push out there, because we need to have his words out. So thanks again
please
for coming to the show.
My chronic posting.
Yes. Yeah. Do you sleep actually? Can I say that? All right, man. Well, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. Thanks for joining in. I want to remind you that you can become a patron of this show by going to patreon.com/RC Press. Become a patron for as little as $5 a month. If you wanted to give us a one-time donation, just go to paypal.me/RC Press. Jordan, thanks so much, man. And Ken, get back out there, man. We need you.
Thank you, Kevin. Have a good one.
All right, you got it. Everybody, thank you for tuning in. If you're listening to this on the podcast, make sure that you're going to stay with us for Out to Cook Live on Monday with Sean O'Leary. Man, I love this show. Thank
That's fantastic, man. So great to talk with you.